Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is the Friday Roundtable. Today, how spies and singers, soldiers, and an unearthly stranger are leaping from page to screen this year.
What if we are here for a reason? What if we are a part of something truly divine? Imagine 91 billion light years traveled like that.
That stranger has slipped through a wrinkle in time and ended up in Hollywood as Madeleine L'Engle's book comes out as a movie later this month. You got to catch Oprah's bejeweled eyebrows and silver gold hair. By the way, the trailer is just radical. Today, on the eve of the Academy Awards, we're going to talk about some of the best page-to-screen adaptations. The books that should never be made into movies. The books that should absolutely be made into movies. What it takes to get it right. Three guests at the roundtable today, and your thoughts, too, via social media. Is there a movie made from a book that showed you a new facet of the story? A book you love, and you dreaded the movie, and then it showed you a new understanding of the book. It really brought the book alive for you in some ways. Tweet me on that, at Carrie. NPR, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our roundtablers today, Lily Percy Ruiz is executive producer of On Being and the host of a new podcast titled This Movie Changed Me. I can't wait to hear what you're talking about on that. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Matt Kelleher is the manager of Subtext Books in downtown St. Paul. Welcome back, Matt. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Peter Schilling is the publicity and outreach for Film Society of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and he hosts a book club called That Movie Was a Book. Is that a snarky question, Peter? Is that a really? Or
well, it really,
how should I take that?
We try to introduce people to classic films that they may not have known were adapted from a novel.
Classic films, though.
Usually, okay. Well, it can be. It's just that you would be familiar with the film, but
yeah.
You would not.
Give me an example.
A perfect example, and the inspiration for it was The Night of the Hunter. Which people did not realize for the longest time. It's one of my favorite books of all time by Davis Grubb. And just a couple of years ago, it was reprinted by Vintage.
Okay, so how do you think you would have viewed The Night of the Hunter as a film had there been no book? Would it have been different?
I think it would have been different. And what was so intriguing to me about this, the book club, for instance, is that we watch a lot of these classic films and then Cool Hand Luke was another perfect example. A lot of people...
I didn't know that was a book.
Exactly.
Really?
Don Pierce. It's been
wow.
out of print and in print. And both Night of the Hunter and Cool Hand Luke, the group that we had, and we had a group of about 20 people for each one, we'd watch the film. They would read the book on their own, watch the film, and then comment on it. And virtually everyone came away saying the book is a lot more powerful, especially Night of the Hunter.
The book is more powerful because they've seen the movie or just...
They had seen the movie
first
and then they read the book and found that they could go into the characters a lot more. There was a lot more. The Cool Hand Luke, it was a lot richer in terms of the prisoner experience. Night of the Hunter is just a very... I would describe it as kind of a devastating book emotionally.
Okay, so since we started this, Lily, is there a movie that... because you're a movie lover, mm-hmm. That you view with yet more insight and richness because you've come to it knowing the book?
I think the first thing that came to mind is The English Patient, that book.
What a great example.
Yeah.
Michael Ondaatje.
Well, exactly.
Most people have no idea that that's a novel.
They right? don't. And now, thanks to Seinfeld, if you remember the Seinfeld episode of The Hatred of The English Patient, a lot of people hate that movie as well. I think of them as two separate entities, though. I mean, I think there's so much lyrical beauty that's in the book, that's in the movie. And one of the things that I admire about the movie is that Anthony Minghella, the late, great Anthony Minghella, who wrote the screenplay for that, he famously said he read the book, loved it, and then he... through the process of writing the screenplay, never read it again. What he wanted to do was capture all of the things that he loved about that book
right.
and infuse the movie with. And he really succeeded because it doesn't matter if he didn't get all the nuances of the characters and he didn't get all the dialogue and the poetry of it, but he captured it on screen with his adaptation. So I always think of that one as really being such a successful adaptation.
So it's interesting because when Michael Ondaatje was here for Talking Volumes, and this is years ago, I reread The English Patient ahead of that. And for some reason, I separate my experience of the movie and the book in a way that I usually don't with the most. I see them as very separate experiences.
Yeah. I think that's particular to Anthony Minghella and how he did that. Because Talented Mr. Ripley is another one he did.
Right.
And he did the same thing. And if you read that book, it's very different.
And I have, Patricia Highsmith.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And the experience of watching the movie, again, he captures all of the things that you love about that book.
Right.
But they don't feel synonymous in the same way.
That's right. Matt, does a movie book to movie, you loved the book, but now you view the movie with... you know, with more insight because you've got the book?
The one that comes to my mind is The Godfather. Those movies are so iconic. Mm. And Mario Puzo's novel is really well done as well. But I don't know. I always try to view them as separate entities, like you were saying, because I think they're two different mediums. You know, you should view and criticize one differently than you do the other. And so I sort of hold them out as their own pieces of art.
The one that always comes to mind for me is True Grit. I loved the new treatment of True Grit with Jeff Bridges and Haley Steinfeld. Hallie. But reading that novel, I really feel like I had additional appreciation, which doesn't happen very often, for Charles Porter's novel, True Grit, because I'd seen that newest. Not the John Wayne one, by the way, and the Kim Darby one, the new one, because I'd seen that movie. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense to me. Yeah, because the director's vision is infusing your own vision, too, from the book. And I think sometimes, like I argue, this is going to be embarrassing, but Nicholas Sparks, not the greatest writer. His movies are fantastic. I mean, they often make great adaptations.
How does that happen?
I have absolutely no idea, but they improve on it.
Peter, how does that happen when the book is not so hot and the movie is just really elevates the experience of the novel?
Yeah.
That's so rare that for me that it's worth talking about.
Well, I mean, a perfect example, too, I think, was if you've ever taken and tried to read Jaws.
Jaws is
a terrible book.
It really is.
Is it?
Terrible. I mean, it is a terrible book.
Peter Benchley, right?
Yeah. Peter Benchley. Yeah. I had seen the movie. I'd loved the movie. And I feel like I'm qualified to go back and look at a book and see it with an open mind. And it is just, it's just
what,
hideous.
Why?
It's just, well, it's turgid. There's this romance between the captain's police chief's wife and the and the scientist. And the middle of it reads like Penthouse Letters. It's just, it's a terrible, I just don't know. And the shark scenes are okay, but it's just a horrible book. And I think Spielberg rightly went and threw it out the window and then just said, I'm just going to take the bare bones. I like this notion of these three characters and we're going to look at that and we're going to make a Howard Hawks movie basically on the sea. And that's what he did. And I always applaud that.
You know, I have to admit to an amount of ambivalent queasiness. This is how I think of it. When Hollywood puts what I think of it as its sticky fingers on a novel that I love.
Especially one that you love.
Are you more open-minded about that, Matt, than I am?
Yeah, I don't think I take it as quite as hard as you, but you know, there is a certain level of, okay, if you're going to do this, you have to do it right. And if you don't,
right,
we're going to let you know.
Right. But I mean, there's so many, and in fact, I wanted to talk to you guys about what seems to be a trend of turning ever more to literature. Lily, you keep track of this kind of stuff. Are we seeing more and more, not the Marvel comics stuff, but more and more movies, Hollywood turning back to literature for?
I don't think any more than it's always been. I think it's always that way just because in a lot of ways, Hollywood is pretty unoriginal. And so they got to go somewhere else to get their ideas. But I get excited by people like Reese Witherspoon, who seems to be working at a publishing house as well.
I know.
Because she just gets the
first
rights.
She's a book lover, first of all.
She's a book lover, exactly. Right? And her adaptations have been fantastic as a result, right? I think about Wild and Big Little Lies, which she did on HBO.
Season 2.
Yeah, exactly. And seeing the possibilities of what what is with great work. I think that's the key thing. For me, it's always I'm excited to see what a great filmmaker does with a great piece of work. Now, when it's someone that I don't really believe in, that's a whole other story.
Mm-hmm. Such as you have somebody in something in mind. What?
No, I mean,
come
to be
on,
honest,
we're naming names here.
Well, Harry Potter was really hard for me because I loved Harry Potter, but I kind of think Chris Columbus is a terrible director. And yeah. You know, he's at Home Alone, and he's okay at what he does. I mean, if you saw his version of Rent, it was pretty bad.
Send all emails to Millie Percy Ruiz.
Oh God, yeah, I always feel bad saying anything about someone.
No,
but, you know, he's.
This is what this is about.
And I have to say, for me, the Harry Potter films didn't live up to the books until after he stopped directing them. Once Alfonso Cuarón did the third one, Prisoner of Azkaban, then it was actually the vision that clearly was Harry Potter, the world, and they created those worlds.
Right.
So after that, it really became Harry Potter for me. So the filmmaker really does matter.
There's a distinct tone in the early Harry Potters versus the later ones, too. Yeah.
What's the tone that you sense there, Matt?
The later books have a certain, I don't know, grittiness to them that the earlier ones don't. And maybe it has to do with the characters growing up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But just when you watch the later ones versus the early ones, you can just kind of see it. I totally agree with you.
How about you, Peter? Have you read the Potter series?
I read the first one.
Okay. And I've read none of them. Do not feel guilty. And you saw the first four movies.
I saw the first four movies.
Okay. So how does that stack up for you since you've only read one of the books, but you've seen four of the films?
For me, it felt very much like the adaptation of the first one was very much just, here's the book on screen. Mm-hmm. And that's my pet peeve, is when the filmmaker doesn't do something original. When they're just we have to stick very closely to the
maybe
book.
That's the best way to honor the great novel. No,
I don't think it is, because the novel is the novel and the film is a film. I mean, to me, a great example of this, and I know this is going to be blasphemy considering I'm right near the Fitzgerald Theater, but I love The Great Gatsby.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And I don't like Baz Luhrmann, but I really like The Great Gatsby because I felt like...
Wait a minute, you liked the new
film
movie.
The Great Gatsby by Baz Luhrmann, because I felt like if you're going to say Baz Luhrmann's going to make a movie, it's going to be a Baz Luhrmann movie, and why would you just do... They did an adaptation of The Great Gatsby with Robert Redford, who kind of is a Gatsby-looking
guy.
Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
And who watches that nowadays?
No one.
It's very boring.
But I'm sure not going back to watch that Luhrmann treatment of it either.
Well, but it's a good example, at least. It's like, you're kind of, to me, when I'm seeing a movie on the screen, I guess when I'm reading a book, I have the movie in my head.
That's right.
I'm in the book.
Mm-hmm. That's why this is a cool conversation, because we all bring our vivid imaginations to this. So you have the book in your head.
I have the book in my head.
The movie in your head.
If I'm going to a Baz Luhrmann film, I'm at least conceding that, I'm about to see The Great Gatsby through Baz Luhrmann's eyes.
So,
now, I don't need to see it again and again and again. That's true. But I want to know what this guy is saying. Someone has read this book and said, Jay-Z's music is going to fit well with this. I want to have Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby. I want to make this world in the way that I know how.
Can you really split off, though, the experience of a novel like that, gets into our imaginations as young kids? And I cannot say that's Baz Luhrmann's version of Gatsby without feeling like in some way that it's tainted the original work. Lily, how do you feel about it?
I just want to hear why you feel that way, because I find them to be so separate, and the fact that he's interpreting it and putting his mark on it.
I guess I don't buy the interpretation, and it feels so indulgent to me. It feels indulgent to be indulgent, not because that's part of what F. Scott Fitzgerald was writing about. It feels indulgent for its own sake, not for the core of that novel. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Were you a fan of his Romeo and Juliet adaptation?
I did like that, yeah.
So what was different
because
about that?
Romeo and Juliet has been done so many different ways and, you know, so many different times.
It doesn't feel as sacred to you.
That's right. It doesn't feel personal to me. Did you like the treatment of Great Gatsby?
I enjoyed it. I have a hard time now with his films just because I feel like he's got a shtick and he keeps doing it.
Yes.
But I did enjoy it. I thought it was entertaining.
And what is that shtick, would you say?
It's kind of like fueled by cocaine. It feels just really
too bright.
Fast
too
edits,
bright.
A lot of lights, a lot of music, a lot coming at you. It feels like you're just being attacked over and over again by different visual elements. But I do think it was entertaining. I do agree with you that I don't know if the core of what the book was about was actually in the film.
Right.
I don't think he really represented that as well. But I take it almost as just a separate thing, really, from the book. So
I guess I couldn't tell that he loved the novel. And maybe that's not a requirement. Maybe I'm expecting too much.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I sort of want to be really entertained when I'm watching a movie. I want to be able to sit there and have the movie end and be like, okay, that was well worth my 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm reading a book, I approach a book much more critically than I would a movie. You know, movies just
I'll bet you these guys don't, though. I'll bet you guys approach movies really critically in a way I bet Matt and I don't. You have high, high expectations for film.
Yes.
Yes.
And see, I have high expectations
Peter,
for literature.
Peter, you and I are in the same boat.
Yes.
Right.
And how often are they met?
Oh, man, so very rarely.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Why is that?
I think in some ways it's hard to find something original anymore. But I also, I saw Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and that movie really impacted me. And I think in large part it's because it felt like I was watching a play. It felt very literary, and it also was talking about the pain that I think we as a country are going through in this little microcosm of this town. And they blew me away in a way that, you know, at least one movie every year does. So it is still possible. But
I just saw that movie, too.
And what did you think?
Couldn't stand it.
Wow.
And here's why. It's not a novel, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, he wrote it originally. Yeah,
I think it would make a fabulous novel. In fact, I kept thinking that as it got deeper. I don't feel like she grew.
Yeah.
And
she didn't. Yeah.
But see, okay, so I'm applying like a literary sensibility to this.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about
it. The whole thing, I was like, okay, so eventually I'm going to see the character grow and change because that's required in great literature. This is what I was expecting.
But to me, I thought, how complex are these characters that we do see some growth. We do see some growth toward the end.
At the very end.
But they're not heroes at all. And how often in our own lives do we grow to the extent that we see in books?
Yeah,
and
that's
we don't,
right?
That's
right.
So it felt for me a lot more true to life and true to who we are. We're not villains. We're not heroes. We're somewhere in the gray area.
Have you two seen the movie?
I have not.
I have not.
Darn it all. It's just me and Lily fighting it out. Okay, I want to know what I've missed. Because seriously, I was probably 30 minutes into that movie and I thought, I would love to be reading this as a novel. Mm. I feel like I'm going to be left kind of flat.
Yeah.
I could almost see where this was going.
Hmm.
What did I miss?
You know, it's funny. I have this conversation often with Krista, Krista Tippett, who's the host of On Being, who I work with. And she loves TV because she feels like it gives you time to really get to know the characters and the characters are developed. And she has no patience anymore for movies as a result of that. And we have this argument all the time. And for me, I feel like there's a lot of subtext you have to get from films. But if a filmmaker's done his or her job well, it's there. It's just unspoken. And they should have given you a feeling, whether through the cinematography or through the acting or through the dialogue. It doesn't have to be so precise and so written out for you.
Right.
You kind of have to bring your own stuff to it as well.
I say this with all appreciation. You bring much more sophistication to your viewing of a movie than I do. Because you've just kind of hit on the stuff that was lacking for me, and I wasn't reading between the lines.
I was
going
to say,
doesn't
that sort of leave the possibility that somebody watching this movie is going to totally miss out on those subtleties and have that?
Me.
Very true.
Well, and probably lots of people.
Well, I hated the movie Lincoln. And I say that because everyone seemed to love it. And for me, it felt like Steven Spielberg showed up, left the camera, and left. Like, the movie to me is so boring. And I was like, there was so much potential there for me. And I think it's sometimes you're going to have different experiences.
Especially
really
when you have the best actor,
movie.
Daniel Day-Lewis, doing it.
Wait a minute. I like that movie. I felt like we were really seeing the nitty-gritty of how legislation got there. That's what I want. You were bored too, Peter, with Lincoln?
I was bored by it, and I just feel like, I don't know. My theory is that Spielberg is inspired by World War II era things.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
So like when you see his World War II era, Cold War era stuff, I mean, I just looked at their battle scenes where Lincoln's wandering around, and I was like, this is just looks like something. It looks like something from like a Key and Peele skit. I mean, it just had this like their bodies laying around. There's some you know, requisite fog, and he's just kind of like got the solemn face on. And I just thought, this is so. It's just so tedious, and there's none of the Spielberg is a very, you know, he's a director that just his passions just come unfolding on the screen when he's got them, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, even Bridge of Spies. I thought had moments that were very, very
it's really good,
engaging because it felt as though he were engaged. And I feel like in some of his more preachier films that don't take place in his favorite time period, in my theory, such as Lincoln and Amistad, they're just they feel like okay. Kids, sit down. I'm going to put this movie in, and you're going to learn about Abraham Lincoln right now.
Yeah.
Don't fall asleep. Yeah. This isn't a time to do other things.
Seventh grade history class.
And his Color Purple adaptation was amazing.
Yeah.
Right? So you have everyone. So I think
he had Oprah breathing down his neck.
Oh my God.
That's
you
true.
Better bring it, Steve.
It's not Oprah. It's Oprah right there.
But I think you're so right. He needs to be connected to the work. And so for me, it's really interesting to see what he'll do with Ready Player One, which is a book that I loved and really enjoyed for the world that it created.
Hold that thought. You're listening to the Friday Roundtable. It's a conversation today about books made into films, what we love about them, what we dread about them, speaking for myself here, and some of the movies that are up for the Academy Awards happening this weekend that have also come from we're going to talk about that too, you guys, books to film. Lily Percy Ruiz, executive producer of On Being and host of a new podcast titled This Movie Changed Me. Peter Schilling, publicity and outreach for the Film Society of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and he hosts a book club called That Movie Was a Book. And Matt Kelleher is the manager of Subtext Books in downtown St. Paul. Lily, you were saying Ready Player One, a book that a lot of people love, being made to a movie. What scares you about that or excites you about it?
Well, what excites me is that, you know, Spielberg, you know, defined my childhood, which was in the 80s. Uh-huh. So for me, the fact that this novel, which is set in the 80s, it should be really right up his alley. And even the trailer, if you've seen it, seems so exciting. I mean, they have the Van Halen playing. They have, you know, all of the key 80s like markers, which the book really just throws you into when you read it. And it's so up his alley in the sense of, you know, he was a producer on Back to the Future and he loves the idea of space exploration and science fiction. And so I think it has to be good. I mean, I'm going with a lot of expectations.
Ready Player One is such a visual book in its own way that I think it just is ready made to be a movie. I'm really excited to see that, too. It's going to be fun.
You a big fan of the book, Peter?
I have not read the book.
I haven't either.
I'm a 70s kid, so I'm not so much. To me, it's like the 80s were Reagan and a bunch of other things I'd rather not remember. So I'm kind of like, I will definitely see the film because it looks exciting. It looks kind of a throwback to the old Spielberg, who was a lot of fun. Because I did. I was a teenager in the 80s, so Back to the Future was a blast and all those weird Amblin movies. It was like there's a Spielberg film out every year, and then there's like five kind of Spielberg films.
Exactly.
The Goonies, and they were all like, you know, and it just seemed like, well, Spielberg seems to have his, like, Spielberg is Poltergeist, right? No, it's someone else.
Exactly.
He produced it. So I'm excited about that.
I want to come back to this idea that there is a trend as to Hollywood coming back to books. We touched on that and then we kind of moved on, and there was an interesting perspective from The Verge. Adam Liptak is writing that the adaptations for books to film are better than ever because of what's going on with television, what you were saying earlier, Lily. They've got a higher bar to meet now. And he says, novels also provide variety in a crowded television landscape. Shows such as The Man in the High Castle or Game of Thrones have introduced new types of stories to television. Working with the greater diversity of literary stories has allowed showrunners to differentiate themselves from an increasingly crowded field of prestige television options and to seek out specific sections of a splintered viewing audience, so that our expectations around what we're going to see in the movies have been shaped by how good television is, especially adaptations from books. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the ones that I'm really excited to see is Fahrenheit 451 on HBO.
I know.
And most really because the book is incredible.
Yeah.
But also because I think HBO is, you know, like Midas, everything they make is gold. So I can't wait to see that. I think Michael B. Jordan is going to be fantastic in it. It looks really compelling. The trailers are incredible. And yeah, I mean, I think that novels adapted to film and screen, especially with, you know, the way we expect TV to treat us these days, I mean, it's an exciting time.
So this is where I think I side with Krista on this idea of television lets you breathe with the characters. And I think of a great series like Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's mm-hmm. Tale. Mm-hmm. Had that not played out over how many episodes, 13 episodes or something? I've read that novel probably 3 or 4 times. I have to say that series gave me new insight and a fresh way to think about what she was saying. I think I missed some of what she was saying.
Because you had the time. And that's right. The real limitation with film is that you're given at the most 2 hours, although some people definitely push it now to 3 hours. but I don't know if it's a bad thing. I think it's just you're working with a different framework and you're working with a different structure. And so that means that you just have to figure out how you're going to do it. How are you going to represent the same story on film?
So do you think our expectations have changed, Peter, because of what's happened, these great adaptations that are happening in TV?
I definitely do. And I think, you know, touching on, if I can transition into A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I'm enjoying seeing are not just, you know, these basically taking and looking at these books and then expanding them because of television, but you're also getting the films are becoming a lot more diverse. Like if you look at A Wrinkle in Time is a perfect example. Mm. Like there's Oprah Winfrey. There's
Reese
Witherspoon is in that. Mindy Kaling.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I remember hearing Peter Jackson talking about someone had asked him why there's no people of color in The Lord of the Rings. And I hope I'm not misquoting him, but I'm pretty sure he said, well, he wanted to make it more historically accurate, which is really insane considering this is a fantasy novel.
With elves.
And yeah. With elves and everything like that. And when I see, you know, I've read A Wrinkle in Time, and when I see the trailer, obviously I haven't seen the film yet, but it's important to me because I look at film like books like, to me, the best example of this is like Children of Men, which was the P.D. James novel.
Yep.
It's very dry in English.
Yes.
It's good, but it's really dry in English. And then the book just explodes with like different types of people. And
you mean the movie?
The movie. I'm sorry. The movie, it just explodes with these. Visually, it's incredible.
Right.
And the diversity in the casting is incredible. And I feel like that's what we're going to see in A Wrinkle in Time. And that's, to me, that's really beautiful because like, why not just take this and put anyone in it? It's like there's nothing that says this is a novel. There's nothing that says, well, you know, yes, it would, maybe it doesn't make sense to have Abraham Lincoln be an African-American. Well, that would have been fascinating too, but in A Wrinkle in Time, you can put anybody in it and then it becomes for everybody. And that to me is really beautiful.
Yeah. The same way that Hamilton does. I mean, you said Abraham Lincoln as an African-American, and Hamilton did it, and it's, you know, the greatest thing ever.
So. Exactly.
It is the greatest thing ever. And it just feels to me like sometimes people see books and then they're like, well, this, you know, Wrinkle in Time takes place in, you know, in the 60s and everyone's white, so we'll make everyone white because that's what the author intended. And it's like, I don't know that the author intended that. I think the author intended it to be read by anyone and that whatever the book plays in their mind, we can put that on the big screen. And that to me is a perfect example of how here's a filmmaker saying, I am going to, Ava DuVernay in this case, I'm going to make this my Wrinkle in Time. It's going to be, it's going to honor the book, but it's also going to be a cinematic expression of my own.
And you've used a good word there because I was just going to say, I don't think it means that you are in any way undermining what that author meant to say in the book or the time in which that was published. I would think most writers would be honored by the way that you're putting new originality and new thinking into the treatment of that book.
Yeah.
That it stands, right? 40, 50 years later. Lily, what do you think?
Definitely. And I think A Wrinkle in Time is such a perfect example to me, especially as we're talking about television, because I often wonder if she wouldn't have been able to do what she's doing if she didn't have Queen Sugar, which is a show that
Ava DuVernay,
love.
Oh, yeah.
And she produces and she's written for, and she very, very specifically made sure that every film, every episode is directed by a woman, and the crew is majority women, and the cast is majority African-American.
Right.
And like, she has made sure that she is so specific to her experience, and then as a result is universal. And I think it's really beautiful, like you were saying, Peter, to see that in A Wrinkle in Time, because it's seeing a reflection of America, right? It's seeing a reflection of all of us.
You know, this has been my frustration with, I love the novel Jane Eyre. It's my favorite classic. Yeah. But the treatments, the film, as much as I like Mia Wasikowska as Jane Eyre,
and she was
wonderful.
She was very good.
But it still felt caught in amber somehow, right? That there had been no, I think it was too faithful of a treatment of that novel, if I can say that. Did you see it, Matt?
I did not see it.
You guys?
Yeah, yeah. I felt the same way. And I actually feel the same way about Wuthering Heights. I don't feel like there's ever been an adaptation.
No.
So maybe it's just the Brontes.
Like, I love the Brontes.
No,
love
meaning the Brontes that too. It's, there's something
trying
about
to bring it to...
trying to bring, and there, and you know, that's a really good point. I think there's some books that are often so emotional that it is very hard to bring them to screen. Like, and I think that's a great example. Both of those. I still don't feel like there's the definitive adaptation of Jane Eyre or Wuthering Heights.
Well, what about Jane Austen's? I mean, those movies
are
lovely.
Yeah.
But
there's so much darkness and drama and toil in the Jane Eyre.
Right.
Oh,
well,
my
yes.
God. Do not. My wife is a big Jane Eyre.
Yeah. She would not want you to mess with.
She would not want you to. No, she would. She likes interesting adaptations of Jane Austen. I'm just saying, don't pretend that Jane Austen doesn't have her darkness.
She does, definitely.
She loves it. I think maybe there are some classics that feel untouchable in some ways, right? If we don't make a movie that is very faithful to what the novel is, we lose the fan base or something.
But then I think, like, a book that I loved as a little girl was Little Women. And I have to say,
love that novel.
Every adaptation in film has been, in some ways, better. Because one of the things that
you mean, better than the book?
Better than the book.
What?
In one area. Or one very specific area.
Smoking.
The love
what?
Story between Joe and Professor Bear.
Yes. Okay.
I feel like when I read the book, even as a little girl, I said, she's really not that into him. And then, you know, once you know the backstory to Lisa May Alcott and how she was in many ways forced to have a love story. She didn't want to have that in the books.
I didn't know that.
From reading her autobiographies, like, you know, her interest wasn't that love story.
Ah.
You know, she wanted to tell the story of the family.
Right.
And in the movies, they've done a better job of representing that love story. I believe that Professor Bear and Joe have this connection. Whereas in the book, it really doesn't carry through.
Right.
I love the book other than that. I think it would have been amazing without the love story if she had been able to do what she wanted.
Hmm.
But in the movies, when you see, particularly in the most recent version with, you know, Gabriel Byrne as Professor Bear, which I'm just like, yes, how can you not?
Right.
that connection really comes through. So there are some ways to improve upon little flaws in classics.
I think classics are, you have a little more leeway to sort of make a film the way that you sort of want to as a director. I think it for me as a viewer, I feel much more closely held. I hold tighter the newer ones. So like Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation movie comes to mind. Like that's one where I'm like, don't do it wrong. Don't do it wrong. Because I have my idea of what Ari X, you know, sort of looks like. I've created that world in my own mind. Whereas with the classic, you know, so many people have told me what that world looks like already that somebody
that's
else can tell
point.
Me something.
Can the director, whoever this is, of Annihilation really deliver on what your imagination has created with Area X?
Probably not, but I'm excited to see him try.
You're listening to a Friday Roundtable. It's a roundtable about books to page to the screen, I guess is what I'm talking about, on this eve of the Academy Awards. We're talking about movie adaptations that are made from books. And we're talking about sometimes the movie elevates the experience of the book. Not very often in my experience, but sometimes. And then sometimes I get a richer experience of reading the book for having seen the movie. And sometimes I say, Hollywood, keep your sticky hands off of my favorite book. So we're talking about some of that today. Lucy Percy Ruiz, executive producer of On Being and host of a new podcast titled This Movie Changed Me. Matt Kelleher, the manager of Subtext Books, and Peter Schilling, publicity and outreach for the Film Society of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and hosts a book club called That Movie Was a Book. Do I have the question mark on that
question
right
mark.
There at the end
exactly.
there, Peter?
Thank you.
So coming up on the Best Picture list, I think you guys have said there are not that many adaptations this time around.
Peter, we were trying to think of, and I think you're right, Call Me By Your Name is the only one I can think of.
I think so. I don't.
How I haven't seen that movie nor read
it's
the book.
Beautiful. I haven't read the book, but it's a beautiful film. Yeah. I have opinions about the movie, but I feel like
Well, let's hear it.
You know, I think it's a beautiful movie. The cinematography is amazing. I did find myself feeling a little bit like it was a straight person's version of a love story between two men.
Gay young men.
Yeah, yes. Which is really beautiful. But then I also understand it's the limitations, speaking of limitations, the limitations of the format. If they were to show any kind of intimacy beyond what they showed, it would have been NC-17. So I think that we still aren't fully accepting love in all its forms.
Right.
And that was my only criticism of the movie, which is such a small thing to focus on.
Right.
But that's why you can get more, so much more, when you read the book.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
because,
true.
You know, yeah, I'll just
you can transport
that.
Yourself
yeah,
and you what you imagine is, yeah. is also hotter than
yeah,
what is
exactly. Absolutely. And the author can play more and, yeah. and be allowed to engage with some things that you can't in film for
yeah.
whatever reason.
But that is something that for some reason in television and cable television, so Showtime yeah. and HBO and Cinemax, like mm-hmm. they have been able to tell these stories and
right.
love in all its forms. And in that way, actually, movies are really behind. There's still so much that automatically gets you branded here in the U.S., NC-17.
Yeah.
Like, just things that you cannot talk about or show. Violence, for the most part, completely okay.
Right.
But when it comes to that complexity of love.
Intimacy, yeah.
And intimacy, yeah.
So the streaming services have been able to push this.
Yeah. HBO,
because
Showtime.
Of the kind of the place they occupy. And,
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're still pretty puritanical when it comes to the MPAA.
I was interested in whether you guys think science fiction and the fantasy books, so much of the Harry Potter, the comic books, what Marvel's doing, has really propelled this trend of a text to the film. I mean, is that you know, some of the roots of why we're seeing what seems to be more adaptations?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, those comic books in particular are very visual, so they're sort of made for, you know, going to film. But they're also one of the only movies that can really get people to go to the theaters anymore. Black Panther broke records for pre-sale tickets.
Right.
And because people are extremely excited to see a movie that, you know, I don't know.
So it's familiarity. So mm-hmm. you've got a built-in fan base mm-hmm. with the comics and like the Harry Potters and those kinds of things. I wonder if that extends beyond that genre. Peter?
Comic books are different even than what bookstores deal with. Like comic mm-hmm. bookstores, you have people
Absolutely.
Every Tuesday coming in to get their
yeah.
weekly Spider-Man, Batman, Black Panther, Wonder Woman. I mean,
huh.
it's you really have. I used to know the guys that ran Big Brain Comics here in Minneapolis, and they used to just be overwhelmed on Tuesdays getting everything ready for the people that would just come en masse to get their comic books. So I think it's amazing to me that it took as long as it did to really make quality superhero movies when you have this audience that will just spend ungodly amounts of money regularly to get those stories. I mean, I think science fiction lends itself to, like, we love to come into a movie to see a spectacle. So mm-hmm. science fiction books lend themselves very well to that. Like one of my, you know, the contrast to that, one of my favorite books, for instance, is Marilyn Robinson's Gilead.
Uh-huh.
How would you even make that into a movie? You just couldn't make them. Nothing
luck.
Happens.
No.
In that way. People ask me, I'd be like, oh, I love this book. What's it about? It's this old guy, and he's
I know
talking
you know
to
who
his
might
son.
Be able to
you know,
do
I mean,
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes,
he might
Paul
actually
Thomas.
Be able to do that adaptation.
Oh my
you
god!
You should write to him and
I
let
love,
him know.
But
love
here's
me
the
Paul Thomas.
I also love that novel too, and you're right; it's a very quiet novel, but. I mean, I would think a director would come in and, as we were saying before, build beyond. I mean, there's a mm-hmm. lot of introspection and through those letters, back telling, right, of
right.
of a life. I think the right director could come in and, but you'd have to pull it out, build it
yeah,
out beyond
you'd have
that
to do,
book.
And again, that's one of those things where there are certain books that are very, I'd almost describe them as like, quiet and they really
yes.
are close to my heart that
right.
I'm just kind of like, I don't even know if I want to see
right.
this in a movie. Like a good example to me is when I saw, and I haven't seen the movie, and the millennials that I work with in my office keep telling me how great it is, but it's The Little Prince, which came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
I love that book. I read that book probably every year, and it's such a quiet and just heart-rendering book to me. It's not that the movie's bad, because I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Right.
I just have no interest in seeing that turned into a movie. I have it in my head. like I said, I have it in my heart. I don't have an interest in seeing special effects. I don't have an interest in seeing someone else doing the voice of the pilot. Mm-hmm. I don't have any interest in any of that. I don't want that to. I have had books that I love get turned into bad movies, and all of a sudden, the actors. Revolutionary
it's
Road.
In your
I've
head.
Read
oh
a
my
dozen
gosh.
Times.
Yeah,
I love that book. A book. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer as well, and in terms of the way that book is written and the way it's structured, I've used that book to try to inform my own writing. And now every time I read it, I have Leonardo DiCaprio as the main character, and I hate that.
And that's
no
just
one else.
Wrong.
It's just Leonardo DiCaprio, and I'm like, it didn't used to be that way, and now it is that way, and it's so sad to me.
This is what I felt about Three Billboards, right? Yeah. I thought there's so much more that could be said and experienced if this was a novel.
Yeah.
Phantom Thread would make a great novel, wouldn't
it?
How come that doesn't happen?
That's interesting. I don't know why more movies aren't. I mean, there's definitely a lot of kids' movies tie-ins when a kids' movie comes out. But, you know, thinking of Three Billboards, you know, one of the reasons that I loved it reminded me a lot of the writing of Raymond Carver, which to me is that precise language. Mm. You don't need a lot. He says a lot in a sentence. I mean, he famously has that short story that's a page long, Popular Mechanics.
Right.
And it's like a lesson in how to say a lot in a little amount of time. And so I think Three Billboards speaks to that. Part of me that loves that doesn't need to be told everything about the characters. And I mean, Woody Harrelson in that movie, he says so much with just facial expressions.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And he's heartbreaking.
How about that crazy woman that they cast as his wife? Okay, now we're going down.
We're going down a circle. Yeah.
What was going on with that? That made no sense.
Yeah, but I love, Peter, when you were talking about The Little Prince, because I was thinking about The Catcher in the Rye, a book that I loved, like probably every teenager. And really, it spoke to me when I was a teenager. And yet, it's never, to my knowledge, been a film.
No.
And I think it's because how do you actually represent that without having the whiniest
actor, my God, I can't imagine.
Known to man, playing this role? And like, how would you actually convey what the internal conflict that he experiences?
I can't imagine. Maybe Paul Thomas Anderson again could do it.
Yeah, our answer is Paul Thomas Anderson
for everything.
Yeah, but
no,
I mean,
I couldn't see. But I tried to when I was a teenager reading it too. I was trying to think of like how would you do it? I was like black and white, and it would be really cool. But then I was like, it's not going to work. You know?
See, whereas I think The Little Prince, if Wes Anderson did The Little Prince, that might actually be magic.
That might have been.
You know, we mentioned, I think, Patricia Highsmith a few minutes ago. It has been gratifying to see, because I've been reading her stories for a long time, gratifying to see that the talented Mr. Ripley and some of the other,
Carol.
Carol. Yeah, Carol. Oh my gosh, that was such
amazing.
A beautiful movie.
The book is amazing, too.
Right.
The book is so good.
So there's, I think, an experience where most Americans who have seen Carol or the talented Mr. Ripley didn't really know that it came from a book, and hopefully some people are being drawn back to her fantastic writing.
Definitely.
Sometimes that happens,
that's
right?
That's reason enough for the movie to
that's
be made.
Right.
I was going to say, that's a win-win.
Right. Yes,
exactly.
Okay, so I want to find out books that you love that you'd like to see made into a movie. So, Matt, a book that you cherish that in the right hands... Besides Catcher in the Rye,
this is actually one that is already happening.
Oh.
That I'm extremely excited about. It's Walter Dean Meyer's The Monster.
Right.
I've never read that book.
What's it about?
It's about a young man, Steve Harmon, who is accused of committing this terrible crime, and he feels it was wrongly accused, and so it's this internal tension between being, you know, called a monster by the district attorney and you know, being in jail and all that stuff. But the book, you know, I used to read Walter Dean Myers all the time when I was in junior high. You know, Hoops and Fallen Angels, all these other books that he wrote. He was my favorite author when I was growing up. And Monster was one that was really powerful and stuck with me. And so I'm really excited to see that come to film.
So
hopefully.
Hopefully. In the right hands.
Yeah.
Who's directing? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I wish I did.
Peter, how about you?
Well, that's a hard one. There are a lot, and I kind of would have to turn to, I really like 1930s Pulp Fiction. So I would pick Black Wings Has My Angel by Elliot Chase.
Okay, fill me in.
Which is an extremely, I feel like nowadays we have the ability to capture the intensity and maybe you'd call it the brutality of 1930s Depression era Pulp Fiction.
Uh-huh.
Because like when you see like The Big Sleep and books from that era. Mm-hmm. They just don't capture what it was like to be in the Depression and how that can turn you toward violence, because it's, you know, they had the code, the Hollywood code that kept things, everyone had to be punished who was a criminal. And this was reissued by the New York Review of Books. They have this really beautiful series of books where they're going back and looking at things that are out of print and putting them into print. And I read this a couple of years ago, and it's just a devastating book about this couple that is just, they're just outsiders in the world. And it's a heist that is both imaginative. It's really fascinating how they pull this thing off. But it's also very violent, but also very sad. Just everyone who's affected by this, including like the bank guards and all that, are people that feel pain and suffer when these things are imposed upon them.
So it sounds like you're saying a movie screen could really bring alive that era in a way that it's hard to access just in reading the book.
Yes. Okay. That's, you know, and the book club that I've had, that I have, this movie was a book. I mean, that's one of the things where I think that surprises people is the intensity of these stories, because the movies from the 30s through the 60s, there are a lot of great ones, of course, but they just, you know, when people get shot, they go, and they fall over. And there's just, you know, the sex is diminished. The violence is diminished. There's no swearing. And that's fine. We have this romantic vision of how the 30s were. But if you read a book like Black Wings Has My Angel, you're kind of, your eyes get open. You're like, whoa, this was in a very interesting time period.
Lily, how about you? No Catcher in the Rye.
No Catcher in the Rye.
Because we already talked about it. What else?
I know Station 11, a book that I loved, is being made into a movie. I don't know who's directing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I know that, I think, because it was so successful.
Emily St. Mandel.
Oh, such a great book. But the one that I'm, to my knowledge, isn't being made into a movie that I'd love is, I love romantic comedies, I have to admit. Mm-hmm. And there's a book by Rainbow Rowell called Attachments that I love. And the whole premise is two women who, it takes place in the 90s in a newspaper. So it's kind of the early days of the internet, and they're both chatting back and forth via email. And it's really, that's the whole book. It's the kind of way that they share with each other via email. And then they have this guy who is the security officer. His job is to every night come in and basically look at everyone's email, anything that's been flagged as inappropriate. And he stumbles upon theirs all the time because they're often saying inappropriate things to each other. And he falls in love with one of the women. And so it's a bit of Sleepless in Seattle in the sense that he doesn't know what she looks like. Right. And she doesn't know who he is. She doesn't even know that he's doing this cybersecurity kind of person. But the dialogue is wonderful in that great Nora Ephron way. And so if she were still alive, I would have loved to have seen her adapt.
Right. I'm going to go very contemporary here with a novel that I've just interviewed the author on. But boy, I mean, from like the third page, I was thinking, oh, this would make such a great movie, which is rare when I'm really absorbed by a novel. It's called An American Marriage by Tyari Jones. It's about a couple fairly newly married in the New South with family that draws them back in kind of the Old South. But the husband, I think they've been married a year and a half, the husband is mistakenly identified as a rapist, and he goes to prison. So he's convicted unfairly. And then it's, where's really the limit of your loyalty and your love?
Oh, my God, yeah.
So sympathetic. I mean, it's just, oh, my gosh, so many different layers.
Did you see the casting already?
Yeah, there's people in my head.
Who are they? Share.
No, I don't want to. For one thing, I don't want to put that in your head reading the novel.
Good point.
Okay?
Influence us.
Because that's all you'll think about. But read the novel. I just did an interview with her, and you can find it on the thread. But, boy, I'm made for the movies. And I want to see more younger African-American novelists getting movies made. It should not have to be such a heavy lift, and it still is for some reason. Hey, you guys, thanks so much. We're going to close with a movie score, and thanks so much. Great, great conversation.
Thank you for having us.
That's the score from The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro directing. And that's the Friday Roundtable.